Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was born in Detroit and grew up in Marshalltown, Iowa, in Grayling, Michigan. We've listened to him for 28 years, announce Michigan State football games, and for 30 years, do the Detroit Pistons basketball babes with his famous trademark sayings such as,
"Don't look now, but we got a two-point ball game."
His name, George Blaha. And we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to George Blaha. George, welcome. It's an honor.
Jack, it's an honor to be on with you.
Don't be nervous, George.
Okay. I promise.
Okay. Can you start with talking about your childhood and your parents?
You know, I feel like I had a wonderful childhood. We were in Marshalltown, Iowa, from the time I was about 5 or 6 years old until I was a young teenager. So we lived in what I thought was an almost idyllic town, 25,000 people. We had a nice mix of religions, and we had a black community, and we had a big public high school and a smaller parochial high school, and you know, I got to caddy as a kid over at the country club, and my mom and dad did the best for my brother and I to allow us to get around the neighborhood and, you know, play baseball in the empty lot on the corner, and all the good things you do. My grandparents were nearby. My grandfather was a country doctor. My dad was a surgeon. I got to go visit my grandfather in the country often, and ride around with him as he made house calls, and he told stories, and maybe that got me started thinking about telling some stories of my own, except actually telling true stories describing athletic events.
How long did you live in Grayling?
Well, we moved to Grayling when I was a young teenager, 13, 14 years old, and my folks stayed right there. And so I've been in Michigan ever since. I really enjoyed my formative years in Iowa, but moving to Michigan opened up new doors for me, especially in northern Michigan. You know, in my broadcasting career, I've been in Lansing and Detroit, basically, but living in northern Michigan has really been a bonus. And I'll always have a soft spot for northern Michigan, hopefully be able to spend a lot of time there.
What values did you learn from your mom and your dad?
Well, honesty, I believe, and hard work. I believe that my mother, God rest her soul, was a wonderful person, and she was always involved in charitable work. She was always involved at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marshalltown, Iowa, and she made sure that my brother and I understood the important things in life, and understood how important it was to be kind to your neighbors, and to be honest and good to your friends. You know how kids are. Well, if we have this party, do I invite Johnny or Billy? And she said, "You're not going to hurt anybody's feelings now." And I've always, I think, ever since my mom pointed me in that direction, and maybe some of it's because I'm like my mom, always tried to be very conscious of people's feelings. And as for my dad, hardworking guy, and made sure that I understood that there really weren't a lot of shortcuts in life. And he made sure that I was always challenged, and worked to the best of my ability.
Can you talk about your days at Notre Dame and the University of Michigan?
Well, I sure can. Notre Dame is such a special place, and I know that you have a connection, Jack. You had Father Ted Hesburgh on your program recently. I heard that. I thought it was magnificent. I certainly can remember my days in school there. He's on the short list, in my opinion, of the greatest college presidents of all time. I don't think I'm qualified to talk about who the great priests are, but he's got to be on that short list as well. And you know, he gave the university so much dignity, and he gave the students there so much pride in the school, and pointed the school onward and upward. It always was a bastion for you know, young Catholic kids and for ethnic kids from all over the country, really. And it always was a good school. He made it a great school.
When did you know you wanted to get into broadcasting?
Well, I think it was as far back as I can remember, Jack. I have to tell you that when I was young, I was one of those kids who took the radio in when I went to sleep at night and listened to faraway baseball games or listened to the University of Iowa play basketball. And in the fall, I made sure that I listened to the Iowa games on the radio when I was growing up in Marshalltown, and always followed you know, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame and the other Big Ten schools as well. As a matter of fact, my dad took me to Iowa City to the very first game that Michigan State ever played in the Big Ten, and the Spartans were victorious over the Hawkeyes 21-7. I'll never forget that Saturday afternoon, much to my dismay, but I always had a lot of respect for Michigan State's athletic program, and it's interesting that it's come full circle. I'm now broadcasting Michigan State football.
What was the first broadcasting job you ever got?
Well, I suppose the job that I got paid for, the first one of those, was in Adrian at WABJ Radio. And I believe they're on our Michigan State football network and our Piston basketball network, one or the other or both. And I covered everything from the county commission to American Legion baseball to high school football. And then moved on to Lansing and got a break, and I was able to start broadcasting Michigan State football. But before I went to Adrian, I went to a station up in the Thumb area of Michigan and recorded some Friday night games on tape that they would play back on Saturday morning, because the station was a daytimer. Therefore, the Friday night games couldn't be on live. They had to be on Saturday morning on tape. And I did those, of course, for nothing, just for a chance to be able to do some games and therefore have a tape to submit to a place like Adrian to get a real job.
We're talking to George Blaha, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with George Blaha, who we've listened to do MSU football for 28 years and the Pistons basketball games for 30 years. George, what's been your greatest thrill in all those years?
You know, I have to tell you, number one, probably the greatest thrill is just being able to do those games for that long. When I sit here and listen to you say that I've been doing Michigan State football for close to 30 years and the Pistons for 30 years, I think how fortunate I really am, because, you know, you have a dream and you try to realize it, and if, in fact, you're fortunate enough to get there, you really better enjoy the ride. And I think I have. I try to not take it for granted, and I try to enjoy all the games. I would say, though, Jack, that maybe my greatest thrill was doing my first Detroit Pistons game because I went to Cobo Arena and we were set for the opening tip. I won't say jump ball, and you'll understand why in just a moment. The two gentlemen who came out for the opening tip, Wes Unseld for the Washington Bullets, who's a mountain of a man and a Hall of Fame center, and Bob Lanier for the Detroit Pistons, who's also a mountain of a man and a Hall of Fame center. And I said to myself, my God, this is a man's league, and this really is the NBA, and I'm so lucky to be here. And that will probably never leave me. I was living in the Lansing area at the time, and I was so excited about broadcasting the game. When I left the game and headed home, I wasn't paying attention to where I was driving. The next thing I knew, I was in Grosse Pointe, and we all know that's not on the way to Lansing. So that was a great thrill. And I've had some others along the way. Certainly doing my first Michigan State football game back in the 70s, I realized that I was absolutely broadcasting a big-time sporting event. You get into a stadium like Spartan Stadium, and you know that you've graduated just a little bit from Adrian High School, where I started. And then, of course, when the Pistons got to the NBA Finals, that was an absolutely unbelievable experience. And to get there and then finally to win the next year, 1989, and win again in 1990, and then the 2004 title was very, very special. This current group of Pistons really has a great work ethic, and they are a team in every sense of the word. All they really care about is the final score.
What's the difference between college sports and professional sports?
You know, I don't know if there's a great deal of difference in terms of the competitors. There are some professional athletes who seem to be off and into themselves. And probably there are some college athletes who really are the same way. But for the most part, anybody who works hard enough to play, for instance, big-time college football and get a scholarship, has to be a very dedicated person. Of course, you have to be talented and have some God-given size and strength and so forth. And the same thing goes for the NBA. There are an awful lot of people who aren't playing college football who could be playing college football for Michigan State and other big-time schools. And there are a lot of people who could be playing in the NBA who aren't playing in the NBA for the Detroit Pistons and other great franchises. So I think the fact that all these athletes have to work so hard to get to that level, as far as I'm concerned, means there's really not a great deal of difference between the two.
As we watch Saturday after Saturday, it seems every Saturday there's a number of great college football games. Why?
Yeah, some that'll break your heart, and depending upon who you're rooting for, and some that'll make your weekend. That's the great thing about college football. I will say that most people, especially if they are connected in some way with the university as a graduate or whatever, really emotionally have a unbelievable connection to the school and to the game. Why are we having so many games like that? Well, there's a scholarship limitation now, so the bigger name schools can't collect all the great football players and just leave them somewhere on their sideline when they could be playing for somebody else. And I also feel that the college game has become a more wide-open game than it used to be. And if you can throw the ball around, even though you may not have quite as much beef and quite as much talent as the next guy, you can stay with them. And a lot of schools have learned how to do that.
When people think of George Blaha, they think of these sayings, a high glass gun that goes, and on and on. Where did these sayings come from?
You know, Jack, I'm really not sure. I think I've done so many games and for so long, and the one thing I did notice when I started broadcasting NBA basketball, it's such a fast game. the athletes are so big, they take such long strides, they get up and down the floor so rapidly that you better be quick when you describe something. And I felt like a gun's a shot at the basket, and if instead of saying he shoots the jump ball and or the jump shot and it hits the top of the backboard and goes through, there's a more brief way to say that, and hopefully a way that works. And I probably use a lot of phrases to try to be brief, and a lot of them somewhere in my mind it clicked and told me that doesn't work, George. You better try something else. That one seemed to work, and I've remembered it enough times to reuse it, I guess.
Who was the greatest MSU football player you've announced?
Well, Jack, the greatest Michigan State football player was probably George Webster, but he was before my time as play-by-play announcer. He and Bubba Smith and that group. The most exciting Spartan I've ever seen was Sherman Lewis, but again, my broadcast partner, Sherman Lewis, was not playing by the time I started broadcasting Michigan State. So I'd say when you look at a list of like Lorenzo White, the great running back, the great wide receivers like Andre Rison and Charles Rogers, and some great defensive players like Percy Snow, it would be difficult to choose, but I'm going to throw a name at you, a guy who I thought was absolutely phenomenal and would have been a very high NFL draft choice had he chosen to play football instead of baseball, Kirk Gibson. Big, strong wide receiver who could outrun anybody on the field. An unbelievable competitor. So maybe I would go with Kirk Gibson as an answer to that question. And you're telling me we got to take a break now?
Yes.
So we'll be back in, let's say, 2:28 with Jack Krasula on Anything is Possible here on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're with George Blaha, who later this week begins his 30th year as announcer of the Pistons. George, you've been around phenomenal athletes for 30 years. What's the one or two biggest things you've learned from that experience?
Gee, Jack, I think the main thing that I have learned other than hard work pays off is that don't buy into all these stereotypes. I mean, I believe that maybe I was a little bit ahead of the curve growing up in Iowa when Forrest Evashevsky was coaching the Hawkeyes, and they really broke down the color barrier in college football out there, and they had so many great role models who happen to be black kids who played for the Hawkeyes back in the 50s. And, you know, Michigan State's been great in that area as well. And then in the NBA, when you're around a bunch of minority guys, you realize that, my gosh, if anybody is still putting stereotypes on people, they're not paying attention. All of us come from different backgrounds, some more humble than others, but some of the greatest, smartest, most dignified people didn't have anywhere near the opportunity that some other people have had, and yet they have persevered, and their hard work has paid off. And I hope that we continue to make strides in the area of civil rights and dignity for Black Americans. I think Father Hesburgh, when he was at Notre Dame on the Civil Rights Commission, turned on the light for me in that area even more so than maybe it was already on. And I suppose if there's any issue that's important to me politically more than most others, that would be it. And I've learned so many lessons in that area from all the great athletes in college football and pro basketball that I've come in contact with.
We're with George Blaha. When we come back, we'll ask him who was the greatest to wear the red and the blue. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to George Blaha. George, who was the greatest Piston you ever saw?
Well, the early days of my association with the Pistons were Bob Lanier's days. Dave Bing had just left, but I think Bob and Dave were clearly the two great Pistons of that era. And then you move into the Bad Boys time, and Isaiah Thomas was one of the greatest players, pound for pound, to ever play this game for anybody. So until proven otherwise, it would have to be Isaiah. I think Joe Dumars, however, is the greatest draft choice this franchise ever made, because not only was he a Hall of Fame caliber player and contributor to the back-to-back champion Bad Boys, but he has reinvented the Pistons and won another championship in the front office.
Are you surprised at how well he's done?
If you know Joe, you wouldn't be surprised, but I think anybody who looked at a great player like that on the floor and said, oh, now he's going to go into the front office, you'd almost feel for him, because he's a tough act to follow. Joe Dumars, the player, is a tough act to follow by Joe Dumars, the executive. But he wanted to do it. He had a passion for it. He wanted to rebuild the Pistons and bring them back to prominence in the NBA and make them what they were in the Bad Boy days to the people in Detroit, the people in the state of Michigan, and the fans throughout the NBA. And because he had such great passion, and he's a very bright guy and a hard worker, I'm not surprised.
What impressed you the most about Magic Johnson?
Great team player. He made passing the ball fashionable again. I think there was a time when scoring, blocking shots, and being able to do the highlight reel dunks around the basket was the most important thing you could do as a basketball player. And people didn't think as much about passing the ball as they did after Magic made it very, very fashionable. He was unbelievable. All he cared about was the final score.
Once in a great while, somebody comes along that thrives at the end of a game. Magic, Michael Jordan, Bird, Tiger. What is it about them that they do that?
They're incredible competitors. And you could put Isaiah Thomas on that list, to be sure. Those gentlemen you mentioned are so competitive. They want so badly to win, and they are not afraid to fail. For all the plays that group has made to win games, they have also missed some shots. Tiger's missed some putts. That goes with the territory, but they're not afraid to fail.
What's the most exciting play you've ever called?
I'm afraid to tell you, it was the steal of the inbound pass in Boston in the 87 playoffs when Larry Bird stole the ball and somehow got the ball to Dennis Johnson cutting to the basket. I couldn't believe my eyes. It certainly wasn't a positive for the Pistons. To their credit, they battled back and made that a 7-game series, nearly got to the finals that year. But it also proved something to me. That kind of adversity and miracle kind of play can break you if you let it, but you can get stronger because of it if you persevere. And the Pistons persevered and eventually got to the finals in 1988 and then got back there and won in 1989 and 1990.
Time after time we see a manager, a coach come into the game, and they transform the team, the university, very quickly. John L. Smith, Charlie Weiss, Phil Jackson, Bill Parcells, etc. These Hall of Famers, what is it about them that separates them from the rest?
I believe they have a passion for their job, and I think a lot of people do, but they take it to another level, and they love what they do. I believe they connect with the players and truly understand what makes their players tick, and somehow they get those players, and usually they have bright players, on the same page with the coaching staff, and then you can win games if you have great players who can make plays. And I think Chuck Daly is the Hall of Fame coach that I spent the most time with, understood the most. And Chuck Daly, a brilliant guy, and always had a great coaching staff, but Chuck Daly also understood you needed fine players and some great players, and you needed to let them play.
Who are your heroes?
Gee, I would say that my heroes are my parents, certainly, and my heroes are people that did the best they could, maybe for their country. When I was growing up, I thought Ike, our president in the 50s, Dwight Eisenhower, was a great American. He'd been a war hero and gave the country some very, very good years as president. When I got on to college, here's Father Hesburgh's name coming up again. He has to be a hero of mine. I think that as I got to know what John Hanna stood for as the president of Michigan State University, and again, one of the handful of the greatest college presidents of all time, when you think how he brought MSU into prominence, he'd be one of my heroes. One of my heroes growing up was Iowa's football coach, Forrest Devaszewski, who, as I mentioned earlier, once was called the colorblind coach by Ebony Magazine, and he was a fabulous guy who actually is a Detroit guy, played at Northwestern, played at Northwestern High here, played at Michigan, was an assistant coach at Michigan State, and a wonderful head coach at Iowa. And I'm proud to say that later in my life and later in his life, we become friends, and he would be a hero of mine.
Who were the greatest announcers you ever listened to?
Mel Allen, growing up nationally, would have been one of my real heroes, the voice of the Yankees and the man who did the Rose Bowl for so many years. Here in Detroit, Van Patrick was certainly a man I admired so much, the late Van Patrick. Hall of Famer Ernie Harwell, of course, not only as a broadcaster, but as a person. And I believe that that Vin Scully, the great Dodger broadcaster, who has also done a lot of national work, is one of the finest all-around broadcasters ever.
What advice would you give to a young person, you know, young boy, young girl, who dreams of getting into that profession?
Well, you have to really have a passion for it. You have to think to yourself, I can't be happy, I don't believe, doing anything else. So I will work at this, and I will accept the pitfalls. I will accept some small-town salaries that I may always earn. Because if you start in Adrian, there's no guarantee you're going to get to Lansing or Detroit or wherever it is you'd like to go. You have to work very, very hard and be fortunate. But you have to work hard enough, Jack, and stay committed long enough so that you can get a break. Therefore, giving up is not an option. And if you're willing to tackle it with that mentality, and it's something you've always wanted, I say go for it.
We're talking to George Blaha, and our own Frank Beckman was the man that helped him get his start with the Pistons. We'll talk to him about that when we come back. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with George Blaha. George, it's 1976. How did you get the job with the Detroit Pistons?
Well, two people from WJR had everything to do with that. Tom Campbell was a gentleman I'd done some work with. When I finished college and grad school, I took a short course in broadcasting, and as part of that course, I got to go as an intern to what was then WQTE, a good music station, as we called it back then, elevator music, some people might call it, but they stopped for some very dignified newscasts and stock reports, and Tom Campbell was one of the newscasters there, and he let me fill in for him on a couple of newscasts and do some stock market reports. So I actually was on the air in Detroit and very proud of it. And we had some conversations about sports. He understood my passion, and I think he felt I was pretty knowledgeable. So when he ended up at WJR years later, and Frank Beckman was a sports director, and there was an opening here. He recommended me to Frank. Frank said, well, I understand that your friend, you know, knows all about baseball and all the other sports, but the sport I have an opening for, and the position is play-by-play for the Detroit Pistons. And, of course, I told Tom, I said, are you kidding me? That would be the dream of a lifetime. And I had a Michigan State football tape, so I had done big-time college football, but I had not done college basketball. I only had a tape of the Class B state championship game of a couple of years before between Holt High School and Muskegon Heights High School. I sent that to Frank, and Frank, you know, was very open-minded, God bless him. He listened to the tape. He liked it. He told me, he said, you know, this is one of the best tapes that I've received, maybe even the best. This was in May, I believe. I felt like the leader in the clubhouse at a golf tournament with Arnie and Tiger and Jack still out on the course. And somehow or other, through it all, I had still the tape he liked the best at the end of it all. And even Bob Costas, who had done games in the ABA with the Spirit of St. Louis, was an applicant, and Frank still hired me, and it was a stroke of luck for me, and a perfect place to be, because I really wanted to be in this town. I like the people here, and I'd always loved the NBA. The NBA and college football are really where my passions lie, so I was very, very fortunate to then be able to hook up with the NBA and stay with college football.
Wednesday night, we start another season at home against Philly. What's your predictions?
The Pistons will be better, Jack, but so will some other teams in the East, especially Miami. They have really loaded up with players to go along with Shaq and Dwayne Wade. They signed Jason Williams, a flashy point guard. They signed Antoine Walker, a great scorer, rebounder. And they obviously are going after the Pistons. They lost in seven to the Pistons last year. Shaq's not getting any younger, but he's getting a lot of help. And they are going to be formidable. I don't know if anybody else has improved as much as Miami has, but the Pistons are going to be able to play some of the younger players. I think Flip Saunders is a little more open-minded about playing the young guys. Darko Milicic, the whole town's been wondering when it's going to be that he breaks out. It's going to be this year. He's been very, very good in the preseason. He can score and block shots. He's dominating. He's quick. And he's 7-1. And a couple of other gentlemen with an international background, Carlos Arroyo, the point guard from Puerto Rico, Carlos Delfino, the shooting guard from Argentina, are going to be very, very good. Maurice Evans, an off-season free agent signee from Sacramento, has been spectacular at times. So the bench, and that would include Antonio McDyess, who was big off the bench last year, And the front court will be a little bit better as well because Dale Davis, a great veteran, has been signed. So the Pistons are going to have more depth. They're going to play more players. They'll keep the best starting five in the game fresher. And they'll have their legs under them, hopefully, when the playoffs begin and they can make another run and hopefully get back to the finals. And who knows, maybe get another championship for the Motor City.
What advice would you give to young people?
You know, I would say that I know you have responsibilities and don't ever shirk those. Those come first. Your family always comes first. But if you get an opportunity to really choose your line of work, I would say this. Do something you love and you'll really never have to work another day in your life. And I don't know who said that first, but I'm saying it right now and I believe it's true.
Is the American dream still possible?
Sure it is. Well, I think we've become, though, you know, a little too selfish, a little too separatist in this country. The political parties seem like they're more worried about themselves than they are about this country. And we have some problems to solve because it's now an international economy. But I do believe that the harder you work, the luckier you get. You see the people who work, you know, 18 hours a day at convenience stores, they eventually make it. And there's plenty of work out there. You just have to go find it and work at it.
You and your wife, Mary, have helped so many causes. One of the biggest that you've really focused on is Vista Maria. Why do you give back? And what is it about Vista Maria?
Well, I think you have to give back. And if you're part of this community, you're part of it. And that's the bottom line. Vista Maria is in Dearborn Heights, and it's a home for psychologically and physically abused young women. And there's a campus right there. And some of the young ladies have actually been in trouble, so they're in almost a lockdown situation on a campus to begin with. But the director, Cameron Hosner, and the whole staff over there do a wonderful job. The young ladies get a great education. They get pointed in the right direction, and they get a great opportunity to make something of their lives. And I feel that there's a great connection between us and Vista Maria. It's one of the charities that means a lot to me. I'm a sucker for animals as well, and the Michigan Anti-Cruelty Society, which is right here in the city over on Cadieux, is so wonderful to the abandoned and abused animals, dogs, cats, and others in Detroit. And as far as I'm concerned, they do an absolutely awesome job, and I'm also on the trail trying to make money for them as well.
What are you the proudest of, George?
I suppose I'm proudest maybe of the fact that I've been able to keep these two wonderful jobs for all these years, and those people have been loyal to me, and I have certainly returned their loyalty, and I've tried, going back to my mom, we talked about her earlier in the program, I've always tried to be very, very respectful of people's feelings, and I hope I haven't hurt very many people's feelings. There have been some great fans there. When they come around, I try to take time for all of them, and I love them all, and I appreciate their support.
George, from all of us, your listeners, thanks for thousands of great, great events, and thanks for sharing with us. Our guest next Sunday will be the restaurateur, Matt Prentice. Until then, I'm Jack Crisula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week because anything is possible.
Thank you, Jack.
Spoken.